This week on our podcast, we're replaying a segment from the show that aired the week of September 22nd, 2001. Our first show after the attacks, only 11 days after the attacks, to be specific, when nothing really seemed funny. David Letterman's monologue from his first show after 9/11 perfectly captured how many comedians were feeling.
You can feel it. You can see it. It's terribly sad. Terribly, terribly sad. And watching all of this, I wasn't sure that I should be doing a television show, because for 20 years we've been in the city making fun of everything, making fun of the city. To come to this circumstance that is so desperately sad, I don't trust my judgment in matters like this.
That week, Brooke hosted a call-in show with then-Saturday Night Live's Will Ferrell. Ferrell was most famous at the time for his savage impersonations of President Bush on Saturday Night Live.
So what's my secret? I don't know. Mostly good genes, I guess. And plenty of sleep. 14 hours a night. Every night. No ifs, ands, or buts. Also, keeping a moderate work schedule and taking frequent cat naps.
Ferrell told us back then that the writer's room at Saturday Night Live was filled with people who, like Letterman, no longer trusted their own judgment.
Yeah, the one place you'd think maybe there would be some tasteless jokes, we weren't coming up with them. Yeah.
So what happened? Yeah. Did you set some ground rules? Did you say, okay, first off, no Bush jokes?
Well, I think the political and topical humor that we're usually known for, we're going to have to kind of keep our foot off the gas pedal for a while. I guess we'll be making fun of celebrities. You can always do that, right? Yeah.
That's fair game.
Right.
The fact is that nobody really seems to care about celebrities right now.
Yeah.
This is the time of the genuine working class hero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it may be, for those of us in humor, our one salvation to still be able to tell, I don't know, the cast of Friends type of jokes. We're beginning to enter a new era for so many different things, including comedy, you know. And watching David Letterman last night, he even said it himself, he's based his whole thing on making fun of things and people, especially in New York, and it's just not appropriate right now.
So, yeah. I mean, where is comedy in this country, and especially in this city and on Saturday Night Live, if irony is suddenly off limits?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I don't know if we're going to be going back to literally the days of vaudeville, and we're just going to be doing slapstick and, you know, slipping on banana peels on
stage. But
who's
going to laugh at that?
Probably no one. But but we'll be trying. I don't know. I don't know. And who knows if anyone will be laughing at anything. So
how will you know it's time to get back and make fun of stuff again?
I guess by baby steps, you've already sensed that there's a slight return to normalcy here in
the
city.
Well, David Letterman did make fun of Regis Philbin.
Yeah,
that's what you call a baby step.
Right, and if every 2 weeks there's another horrible news story, you're still not gonna want to yuck it up. So,
I'd like to bring in Deborah now in Manville, New Jersey. Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for the program. I really felt very compelled to call. I find that we really and truly do need some humor right now. I believe in laughter as part of the healing process.
If Will Ferrell went into his famous George Bush imitation, could you still find
it
funny?
No, I don't think so. And as Will was saying, you know, it's tough.
So you want to laugh, but you don't know what you can laugh at right now.
True. Very, very true.
Yeah, well, I think the humor will go back to more just observational humor about just quirky things in life and silly characters that aren't based in reality at all.
So you see the resurgence of Shecky Green?
Yeah. Maybe just a lot of knock-knock jokes.
America. Hello, America. It's me, George W., your president. And in a few weeks, I won't be able to say that. I know it's sad, but change is necessary. Without change, we'd all wear the same clothes every day and only watch the movie Tango and Cash. So I'm leaving the White House to go tear Dallas a new party hole. But don't worry, the Tiger Woods guy is taking over, and he seems to know a lot of stuff.
Comedian and podcast host Mark Maron was living in New York on 9/11 and saw the towers go down. Brooke spoke to him on the 10th anniversary of the attacks.
At the time, there was a lot of talk about the end of irony, and although it's easy to look back and say, ugh, how naive we were, did you suspect the time that perhaps we were entering a fundamentally unfunny era?
No, I never thought that. I knew it was only a matter of weeks before things got funny again, in the sense that, you know, comedy has always been used to diffuse fear and horror and uncertainty. It doesn't just go away. It becomes even more necessary.
Did you talk with other comedians about when it was too soon and when it was time?
The people I was hanging out with, we never thought about that. Let's do it immediately. You know, we're in the trenches here. We were in New York City. We had to reckon with it. I mean, there was a period there where you couldn't even go below 14th Street, really, unless you lived there. And as soon as comedy clubs started functioning again, we were out doing it. And, you know, they haven't found most of the bodies. You can still smell the thing burning. Are we going to stand up on stage and act like it's not happening down the street? So we weren't afforded that time.
But you've said since then that the laughter was just strange, something you hadn't encountered before.
Right. Well, that was because we were in these clubs. I remember it was the Comedy Cellar, I think, where I really started to do stand-up again. And people were wandering in. It was almost as if they had no idea where to go with their feelings. They had no idea where to go with their anger and their pain and just the horror of it. I mean, at that time, there were pictures of missing people all over New York. It was a collage of this horror. And people would wander in and they'd sit down. And I don't know that they knew even why they were there other than to find something to distract them from what we were living in at that moment. And the laughter came quickly. You'd do jokes and it'd be like, ah, there was terror in it. And then it would go away very quickly. I'll just never forget that. You know, you drop a punchline, you'd be like, ah, and then it would stop abruptly. And you realize that nothing I'm going to say up here is going to create any comfort that they're going to be able to walk out of this club with. That what they're here for is a very intense need for relief in this moment. And that is the best we can do here. So the audiences at that time were something I'd never experienced before, and I'll never forget it.
Let's play one of your earliest jokes post 9/11. It's essentially about pain.
A few months ago, I was on the road, you know, and I'd be like, yeah, I live in New York. And they're like, oh, really? I mean, New York City was like the girl at the office who got raped. People are like, oh, we heard when, oh, yeah. Is everything okay? You doing okay? All right, well, we just want to let you know that we saw it from across the way and there was nothing we could do. We're just glad you're okay.
Can you take us back to the moment when you were writing that joke? What went through your mind?
Well, all you heard about was, like, you know, a nation is coming together. You know, I even had family members who just wanted to flock to Ground Zero. It was almost a magnetic attraction to tragedy. But I thought that a lot of people were coming from the Midwest to rubberneck and that they were flocking here to sort of politicize this thing, to make it about religion and about nationalism and about everything else. I felt that there was an agenda to this gawking, and it made me angry. And just that weird, condescending, sympathetic tone of people approaching you when they hear you're from New York, and it was just like, oh, my God.
The earliest, most stunning bit of 9/11 humor, so to speak, would have been the late September issue of The Onion, what's called the blanking, we'll bleep it, what's called the holy f- issue that showed the burning towers and featured such headlines as "Real Life Resembles Bad Jerry Bruckheimer Movie." You had an interview with Todd Hanson, who was the lead writer of The Onion at the time. Let's play a little bit of that tape.
The story that people always talk about that issue was not on the front page, which was God angrily clarifies don't kill rule. And he was saying, look, I've been saying this for thousands of years. How much more can I explain it? You're pissing me off now. Quit it.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of that story, you know, God actually starts crying. And I was actually crying when I wrote that. I mean, it was funny, cry more than funny, ha ha.
Right.
Normally, the Onion loves to be irreverent, and we love to get hate mail. And we did get a lot of hate mail right at the beginning of the day. But then throughout the day, we started getting hundreds and hundreds more, eventually thousands of emails. And 90% of them were not only supportive, they were like ecstatic. They were saying things like, God bless the Onion. You know, thank you, the Onion.
Right.
Thank you for giving me the first laugh I've had in, you know, a week and a half.
I mean, this was so early after the event, and yet they waded right into it. What was your reaction?
That was the truth of how everybody was feeling. You know, outside of the pain of loss or the pain of uncertainty or the fear of uncertainty, that was the immediate feelings that everybody had. I think it enabled people to have a little bit of distance and get a little bit of a laugh, but I don't think it really trivialized what happened.
Todd Hanson told you that he didn't want to, quote, question the establishment when the establishment lay in burning embers at our feet. But there was a lot of subversive humor to follow. One of them is the classic trope, if I don't blank, then the terrorists win. And here we have David Cross doing one of those.
You just see all these guys, like you'd read this thing in the paper, you'd be in like Houston, Texas, and be like, you know, we seriously considered not doing our show after the events of the 11th, and we had a meeting. We were like, guys, should we do the show? And then we all said, no, we shouldn't. And then I stood up and I said, uh-uh, guys, no. If Houston's own Assaulted Nuts improv group doesn't perform, then the terrorists have truly won. And we were like, yeah, that's right. The Assaulted Nuts will perform. Like Osama bin Laden's going, please tell me the Assaulted Nuts are not performing. No, what must I do? What more must I do?
So there were a lot of jokes like that.
Well, how people take ownership of that tragedy and how that tragedy is used for individual gain or political gain or even marketing gain was heinous. And taking ownership for 9/11 or using it for cultural traction is definitely something that deserves to be satirized. And I think he did it in a very funny way.
Is there a 10-year 9/11 joke, or is it just not relevant anymore?
Well, if it's not relevant anymore, it's because it's been beaten to death one way or the other through humor and through politics. It's a good question. It's obviously relevant as something we all lived through. It actually came up on stage the other night. I'd done a setup to a joke where I say I almost killed two people. And there's no reason to laugh there, but some woman stage right just started laughing. I'm like, what's wrong with you? I mean, there's no joke there. Is it just funny, the idea that I almost killed people? And somehow, like, I'd built on it to the point where I got the Holocaust involved. I said, is that funny to you? And then people were still laughing because I was sort of attacking this woman. And then when I said 9/11, it was like, whoa. So I think it does still represent a tremendous pain in this country's cultural fabric.
This has been an OTM Podcast Extra. Hey, sign up for the newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter at onthemedia.org. Thanks. I'm Bob Garfield.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.